Welcome to Attention Talk Radio, the show centered around paying attention to attention, with your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper.
Welcome, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. I'm your host, Attention Coach Jeff Copper, with our co-host with us in our virtual studio, Kirsten Milliken. Our topic tonight is ADHD advocating in the educational system, and it is February the 6th of the year 2013 at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. As a reminder, this is a show of a five-part series. We've already done a criminal law and education attorney and ADHD community asset, but we also have next week ADHD juvenile justice in the schools and on the streets. Then the next week, ADHD juvenile justice accused but not sentenced. And then finally, ADHD in prisons, the travesty and reintegration. Before we get into the meat of the program, which has been pre-recorded, we did this on purpose over this five-part series so that we can transition from one to another very seamlessly. But before we get into the meat of the show, I just want to touch base on a few announcements for those out there. If you want to follow us and keep a track of everything that we're doing, and you're a Facebook person, go to facebook.com/attentiontalk radio. We have Attention Talk Radio falls under the Attention Talk Network. We also provide video and news, and the video portion is Attention Talk Video. All you have to do is go to attentiontalkvideo.com, and we interview experts in the field of ADHD, just like we do on the radio show, just in the video format. And then Kirsten heads up Attention Talk News. Briefly, Kirsten, you want to just share with our guests a little bit about what that's about?
I would, Jeff. So Attention Talk News comes out twice a month, and we like to include a little summary of maybe a past show that you might have missed. One of your Attention Talk video videos in there, interviewing one of the guests. And oftentimes there's an additional video, maybe a little surprise there, and an attention teaser. So it gets you to look at things maybe with a different perspective as you try and problem solve the brain teaser. We also have some guests who are contributing some material, so you get to hear a different voice sometimes within Attention Talk News. And then, of course, we have our recent and past shows or upcoming shows that are on there so that you can listen to shows in our archive and also make plans to see what shows are coming up that you might be interested in. And, again, all you need to do is go to attentiontalknews.com, and there's a space there where you can subscribe to the newsletter, and that'll come directly to your inbox twice a month.
There you have it. One other announcement, if you haven't already started planning for the CHAG conference in November of 2013, it's not too early to start that. You can get more information at chadd.org. As a reminder to everybody, this was a pre-taped show. In just a second, we're going to have Kirsten introduce Rob, and then we'll run the tape without any further ado. So, Kirsten, I know this was a lot of fun for both of us to do this, and I learned a lot. I guess any comments before we run it?
Yeah, I think Rob presents everything in a great package. You know that I've worked in the field of juvenile justice, but he comes at it, you know, from the legal side as well as from the mental health side. So I think it's just fascinating to talk with him and for our guests, hopefully, to listen to what he has to say.
Well, without that, we'll run the tape. Without further ado, here you go, Rob Todisco.
Rob Todisco is the executive director of the EDGE Foundation, whose mission is to provide specialized coaching for college students with ADHD. He also has a law practice in New York and is a freelance writer. As an adult diagnosed with ADHD, he is an avid runner and an eight-time marathon winner, which is just, or finisher, not winner, finisher, excuse me. Since his diagnosis, he's researched and written extensively on the subject of ADHD and the practical coping mechanisms and systems for adults with ADHD. He is a past member of the National Board of CHAD and a current member of, and past chair of CHAD's Public Policy Committee and former vice president of ADDA. You know, we could go on and on. Rob really has a lot of credentials behind him. He's also a legal expert, a columnist for Attitude Magazine right now. And he's just, you know, a fascinating, intelligent, and really personable guy. So, Rob Todisco.
Welcome, everybody. We've got Rob Todisco in our virtual studio, and our topic tonight is advocating in the educational system. Robert, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Jeff.
Robert, the educational system. We have Section 504 plans, and we've got IEP plans that are out there that are designed to kind of help help those support, protect, advocate for those with ADHD. Can you talk about these laws a little bit? And I want to kind of get into, because this is a real difficult area, I think, for some parents, because it can be overwhelming, but I want to talk about the laws that they're there and kind of talk about, you know, do they really work the way they're supposed to? So can you just kind of frame them out a little bit to get into discussion?
Sure. There are three basic laws, actually, the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADHD, Section 504 of the Rehabilitation Act, and also the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, IDEA. And they all protect students with disabilities. IDEA is the only one that's actually an educational statute. The other two are actually anti-discrimination legislation that protects students if they're being discriminated against based upon their disability. The interesting thing about them is that for younger students, students that are younger than seniors in high school, the law provides that both laws actually contain a component called child fine. What that means essentially is that the responsibility of the school district where the student lives to identify the disability that child may or may not have, and document it, and also provide appropriate services, what's known in the law as FAPE, F-A-P-E, a free appropriate public education. Now, IDEA is very interesting in the sense that it is a very structured statute that requires the schools to put together what's known as an individualized education program, what you referred to earlier, Jeff, as an IEP. And that really is a blueprint, or it should be, for what services and support is needed. And one of the things parents have to remember, if they are reluctant to get their child classified for special ed, they really have to get their mind out of the traditional thought that special education is a bad thing. Special education is not a place. Special education is a service. And for many students, it's really very important to have that individualized education program so that goals can be set, benchmarks can be established, and students can really get the support and services that they need. Section 504 is a little bit different. There are 504 plans. They're a lot less formal than IEPs are, and they concentrate almost exclusively on reasonable accommodations, such as extra time and that type of thing, as opposed to the actual services themselves. It doesn't necessarily mean a 504 plan is better than an IEP or vice versa. They both can protect a child adequately, but parents really have to understand, and it's unfortunate because parents get thrown into this special education maze. You really have to learn a whole new alphabet. There are a whole bunch of acronyms that go on. And while this is all going on and they have to educate themselves, they're watching their children struggle, and it can be a very emotional thing for them. And that's very, very difficult to go through. And the bottom line in all of this is that while the schools have this legal responsibility, these services and supports cost money. And in a limited special education budget, schools aren't always ready to give students the support that they need. Many schools say, well, we don't have that service available here, so we can't give it to you. The law is clear that the schools are not supposed to provide what they have. The schools are supposed to provide what that child needs. And if it's not available, the school has the legal responsibility to either bring it in from outside through a contractor or to place that student in a private school and pay for it so they can get the support and services that they need. And what's really important through this whole process is that parents educate themselves. You want to educate yourself on the law, that's great. You want to educate yourself on your child's disability, whatever it may be, ADHD, Asperger's, bipolarity, clinical depression, whatever. But what's most important and what's often overlooked is that the most crucial piece of education here is to for parents to educate themselves on how that disability impacts your child, what the symptoms are, what are the things about ADHD or Asperger's or anything else that are holding your child back? Because the law does not require the school to give a child services or support merely because they're diagnosed with one of these conditions. The parents have to take that extra step and establish that that disability impacts a major, substantially impacts a major life activity, which is learning for students. So you have to make a nexus between the ADHD and how it is impacting your child, and that's really very important. Many
so
parents,
Rob,
I mean, I'm sorry.
So Rob, how do you see them doing that? I mean, I've worked as a psychologist in the school systems, and I know that, you know, in that position, they typically do the bare minimum. And they're not looking to get all of those nuances of each individual child learning. They're looking to just make a blanket diagnosis and give the standard accommodations if they can get away with that. So how does the parent go about figuring out what are the challenges that their child is having because of the disorder in the school setting?
Well, there's two things I think that are really important that are often overlooked by parents. Parents will talk to the school psychologist, talk to the teachers. They will talk to their own individual evaluator. What they don't do as often as they should is to sit down with the children and say to their child, what is the hardest thing about school? And it's funny because what I was about to say was that often parents will come into my office wanting to sue everybody. They're frustrated. They feel that they've been taken advantage of at the table at school, and they see their child struggling, and it's very emotional. And one of the things I will say is, before we start talking about suing people, what is it that you think the school is not doing that they should be doing? And all too often, the answer that I see from parents is, well, we don't know, but they're not doing enough because he's still struggling. And that's a recipe for disaster right there, because unless you can articulate your child's challenges and have a game plan going in, you're going to have problems. And many parents will react in a situation involving emotions, and their anger will flare up because they're hitting like a brick wall. And the what they have to understand is this is not about winning the fight with the school district. This is about getting what your child needs, period, whether it's through, well, first of all, it starts through educating yourself. But through cajole, 85% of this is diplomacy. I tell parents that come into my office, when I graduated law school, I got a diploma. I didn't get a magic wand. There's a lot of things you could do, and one of the things is understanding the psychology of what goes on at that CSE, or Committee for Special Education, team meeting. Okay, the person that typically runs the meeting is the director of special education that probably knows the least about special education and certainly the least about your child in a one-to-one personality sense. And so, and they control the budget. And what you have to do is win that person over. And if you go in there in an adversarial demeanor at the outset, I will tell you that you are going to have problems. I can tell you a very quick story. I was at a special education seminar for attorneys once, and I ran into a colleague of mine from law school, and he represents school districts, and I represent parents. And at the break, we were sharing war stories, and I was telling about the parents that come in and want to sue everybody and don't know what their child really needs. And he told me, you have to see it from my end. The first time I get notice of a hearing, I call up the school and say, before we litigate, why aren't you giving the parents what they're asking for? And he said, you would be horrified to know how many times the answer is something like, well, you should have heard the way that mother spoke to me, or the father slammed his fist on the table and stormed out of the room. So now they get nothing. And you have to understand that when you go into these situations, you have to, you can be, you can advocate for your child and you can do it with emotion, but don't become a slave to emotion. I think it's important that parents have make a notebook of all of the evaluations and of all of these things, but also have a photograph of their child in the front of the notebook. Because at the end of the day, this is not about the personalities at the table. This is about a child. It's one of the things I can tell you from my experience, this is my own informal research, that the most incorrigible children seem to take the most angelic photographs. And so having everybody kind of regroup and realize that this is about a kid, not about your personality or mine, is really an important thing. But I have to tell you that in addition to talking with your children, you also have to treat the evaluations. If you have the ability to pay for your own independent evaluation, I strongly advise doing it. And speak with the evaluator. Just don't get that report and say, this is, you know, stuff that I don't understand, and I'm just going to hand it in. Understand what it means. That evaluation, if it's done thoroughly, should really be a blueprint for what your child needs. And when parents go into these meetings and say, I want this service and that service, there's always an impression that you want what's best for your child. The law doesn't require the school to give you what's best for your child. They are required to give you an equal opportunity and level the playing field. If you go in there and say, I'm not asking for this because I want the best for my child, the evaluator says they need it because they have a slow processing speed, or they have dysgraphia, or these educational tests show the specific deficit that we need to address. That is really how you get an effective meeting at the table. And if you don't, if you do things the right way and you build a record and you every communication is reduced to writing and you base everything on what the evaluator needs, you may not win at that table. You're in a much better position if you have to go over the school's head to an impartial due process hearing. And that's done by a neutral hearing officer. And so, you know, parents need to know that and understand what the process looks like.
Rob, there's so much great information that you just kind of laid out. We need to go to break, but we come back. I want to just kind of back up and sort through that stuff, organize it, and put a little context, and then kind of keep going. But before we go to a break, just for our listeners out there that might be interested in learning more about Rob or contacting him, the best place is to go to the website at edgefoundation.org, or you can email Rob,
rtudisco@edgefoundation.org.
So edgefoundation.org. And with that, everybody, we'll be right back after these messages.
Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is TimeTimer.com.
Hey. Hey, you.
Are you the parents of a child with ADHD? Does your child need successful task completion structures? We are Hey You. And we make routines fun and easy.
It's time to rise, so open your eyes.
Go to heyyouadhd.com and download our task completion programs today.
Shake it out. Shake it out. Move our body around.
You deserve the best trained ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back, everybody, to this edition of Attention Talk Radio. We've got Rob Tedisco in our virtual studio, and we're talking about advocating in the educational system. And, Rob, before the break, you just gave out a whole plethora of information. I want to kind of back up because what's interesting to me is you've got these statutes that are designed to protect students and kids. Just because you get a diagnosis doesn't necessarily mean one would apply to your child. Was I understanding that correctly?
Well, right. Once a diagnosis alone does not mean that you need services and doesn't guarantee services. You have to show that the disability as it manifests itself is making a major impact on this life activity, learning.
And what I heard from you is the schools have a legal responsibility to go look for these situations where somebody might need help. Is that accurate?
That is correct. Based upon the component in the law called child fine, even students who don't go to that school or are too young to actually be in the school system, there is also required to have a committee for preschool special education. And so even if a student is too young to be in the school system, you have to remember that there are certain windows of development that children go through. If they don't speak at a certain age, that will lead to a delay in reading and so on.
Yep.
And so the schools really have to take a proactive role. On paper, anyway.
Yeah, so, but they're supposed to do that, but there's really not an incentive for them to do that. Is that accurate?
Correct, unless your parents have to be ever vigilant. And there's also another side to this that we haven't even touched on yet. And that is, if you get through this process and get those services, that doesn't mean you won, because you still have to be ever vigilant to make sure that that IEP is being followed, that the services that the school have agreed to are being administered, that your child is getting those supports, and that they're effective. If they're not effective, it has to be modified. So the parents really need to kind of take an active role.
Here's what's interesting to me is, again, these statutes are there. The schools are supposed to go find these students, but there's no incentive for them to do it. Furthermore, they have budgets too, right?
Correct.
The other thing, too, is, as you described what you just did, it seems to me that some of this is really complicated. So not only the school administrators need to understand this space, and it doesn't sound to me like you can get it in a 6-week course. I mean, this stuff sounds pretty complicated. So would you say there's ignorance in the system?
There is, and I have to say this. A lot of this seems like it's an adversarial process. A, it doesn't have to be. But more importantly, I find that teachers genuinely want to help students. I feel my experience has been the teachers that work with these kids every day see them struggle, want to help them. And there are teachers who will say to the parents, you really need to look into this. The problem is that the administrators who have that limited budget have very real practical concerns, and decisions are made based upon either dollars and cents or administrative decisions, whether it be staffing or whatever else, and it's unfortunate. But, I speak at conferences all over the country, CHAD conferences, and they are filled with teachers who want more information about how they can work with their students and how they can help students. They want to understand ADHD. They want to, do a better job. They don't just want to teach these kids. They want to reach these kids, which is really the key.
And one of the things that jumps out in Kirsten's questions a couple minutes ago, it seems to me that if you're a teacher or a school system and you have there's the top 10 list of accommodations that are all readily there, because I want to get to a second your comment about you need to understand how your child's disability impacts them. But Kirsten, you've been in the school system, and I've heard you speak to this before. These teachers, if they don't know the individual situation of their kid, they are apt to come to apply just the traditional accommodations and beyond with that. Is that accurate from your experience?
That's absolutely accurate. I mean, every kid that has ADHD gets the standard sit at the front of the room, and maybe some motor breaks if they're a restless kind of kid. And, there's a list of probably, like you said, the top 10 things that an ADHD student needs to be successful. And so often they're missing the mark. Maybe the kid's not fidgety. They don't need motor breaks. What they really need is a different type of learning in order to understand something, rather than just being lectured at or what have you.
And it's easy for the schools to kind of cookie cutter and say, hey, here's these kind of accommodations. We're under expense restraints. We're not going to, if there's a different type of learning, as Robbie said, and you need to bring other resources in, that's expensive to the school. So they're apt, because there's not incentive to find them, and they're apt to kind of throw this stuff out here, which really, I think, Rob, is one of the centerpieces of what you say. Number one is, as a parent, you need to educate yourself and understand how your child's disability impacts the situation. And I'm totally getting the diplomacy, and I'm also totally getting that to me, as a parent in this situation, unfortunately, you're going to have to really take the bull by the horns. The law was intended to find these situations, but at the end of the day, it really doesn't work like that. It's up to you to get educated on your kid and – go into this with understanding generally what's going on, because it really comes down to the art, the diplomacy side, right?
I agree, yes.
The other thing is, too, is you've got parents who, so often we talk to, Jeff, who actually are using strategies at home that work for their kids. And they don't think that to share that with the school, because it's something the kid's already used to. And it's a different environment. But if they shared some of those strategies with the school, they might get a really good outcome. And the school would see them as an advocate and as a support for them as well. They wouldn't feel like all of the responsibility was being put on them.
And, you know, I like what you said with that, but I'm also I'm tying this together with what Rob said. I think the teachers really kind of want to help, but sometimes if your child has got if their ADHD impacts them a little bit different, because Lord knows once you've seen one person with ADHD, you've seen one person. I mean, it's all different. If they don't know what to do, it's hard. So if you can take the mystery out of it for the teachers, because at the end of the day, Rob, they've got jobs to do. I mean, if they've got 20 or 25 kids in their class running around and they're dealing with all that type of stuff, it's sometimes hard to actually sit and study a kid and kind of help, kind of hone that in. Is that, I mean, would you say that's accurate?
Right, and I want to be fair about this. I mean, you know, we have to understand that the school, in addition to the financial concerns, they're in the business of throwing a blanket of education over thousands of children. And so it's difficult to do things on an individual basis. I get that. However, we now know that students process information and learn things differently. And, you know, one of the things, just to kind of touch on what you were saying earlier, is that one of the problems, if there are strategies that are working at home, if it is something like ADHD, there are parents who want to protect their children from social stigmas, and they're uncomfortable about talking about the ADHD, even with the teachers, because they think that they are protecting their children. And I get that, and that's a very noble motive. The problem with that is that secrecy breeds shame. And one of the reasons I think it's so incredibly important to sit down with your children and discuss their learning differences openly is when you involve them, it's not just mom and dad going to school to talk about me. It's me being involved in that situation. And for a disability, I'm not a psychologist, but for a disability, I can tell you from my own personal experience, that so permeates these kids' sense of self-esteem that when you involve them as an integral part, kind of the basis of ADHD coaching where it's client-driven, you really empower them. And another thing that's really kind of not talked about as well is that a residual problem is that if you don't talk about ADHD and you don't talk about the strategies openly, when these kids get older and they go on to college, the law changes and that responsibility that school districts have reverses, and it's up to the student to self-report their disability and document it and ask for services and support. In those cases, most of these kids are ill-equipped to understand and articulate how their ADHD impacts them because it was a big secret in the house. And so they really are in a very poor position to advocate for themselves as they get older. And that's something, you know, advocacy should really begin at home. I can't stress that enough.
Everybody out there who's listening, you might be overwhelmed. We're going to start moving here a little bit to some practical type stuff because I know this is kind of crazy, but I think the keys to understand the space is the system doesn't work the way. There's not an incentive for the schools to do what they're supposed to do. The incentive really falls on you, the individual, to go out there. But the idea is you need to understand what's going on. You need to get the education. You need to understand how your child's disability impacts a particular situation, and you need to help take the mystery out of it for the schools. The teachers every day, I think, want to help, but if they don't know what to do, it's just a Mexican standoff and kind of creates some problems. So with that being said, in kind of moving forward, if Rob, when,
Jeff,
if,
can I, Jeff,
yeah,
can I just add one more thing, one piece that you missed, which is that we also need to be educating the students to be aware of their own ADHD and to be assertive about their own needs when they're at school and at home. Because ultimately, they have to be able to advocate for themselves.
And Kirsten, thank you very much for bringing that up, because I had forgotten that point. Because one of the other things that's ringing out with me that both of you has said specifically and indirectly is sitting down with the children and spending time to understand them and having them a part of the process and know what's going on, that's another piece of the puzzle, because it seems to me that so often everybody just kind of goes off to the races and nobody ever does sit down with a child. They're just an innocent bystander in the process. It's like a volleyball getting tossed back and forth over a net. They're being volleyed, but they're really not participating.
I think it goes back to what Rob was saying earlier, right, when you said, the parent needs to sit down with their kid and say, what's the hard part of your day? So that's exactly what we're talking about.
Absolutely.
I'd like to give you a practical example of how this can work.
I'd really like to get in that. Can we run to the next break real quick, and we come back, jump right into that?
That's perfect.
A reminder, everybody, if you would like to get in touch with Rob, you can email him at rtudisco@edgefoundation.org, or you can also just go to the website at edgefoundation.org. And with that, we'll be right back after these messages.
You're listening to Attention Talk Radio. We'll return in a moment. Your life, your world, your choice. This is Attention Talk Radio.
Experience the difference with a top-notch ADHD coach. Find one at the ADD Coach Academy, the only comprehensive ADHD coach training program accredited by the International Coach Federation. Go to addca.com and click on Find a Coach.
Make every moment count with Time Timer, a sensitive solution for ADHD time management. It shows how much time is left using a bright red disc that gets smaller as time passes. To place an order for a Time Timer, all you have to remember is timetimer.com.
We are CHAD, the nation's leading nonprofit organization serving the community impacted by ADHD. CHAD and Attention Magazine provide science-based information about ADHD to families, professionals, the media, and the general public. Attention is the only publication in which your paid advertising promotes the mission of leadership, advocacy, research, education, and support for the ADHD community. Interested? Advertise in Attention Magazine and CHAD's website at chadd.org or call 240-487-2314.
And now, back to Attention Talk Radio.
We're here with Rob Tedisco. Before the break, Rob, you said that you had an example for us talking about parents and children being able to advocate for themselves and helping the school out.
Yeah, I think this is a really important example because, one is, look, the financial aspect of this is a reality, okay, especially in this economy. The schools are getting less money from the state and from the federal government, and so the pie has to be divided up, and the pie is only so big. So I was doing, some time ago, I was doing an exercise with some parents about trying to figure out accommodations they could ask for where money wasn't an issue, that would either cost no money or very little money, and really seeing, what they could come up with. And a woman raised her hand in the back of the room, and I tell this story every time I speak about this because it's so powerful. She said, I'd like to share this example with you. When my son played hockey on the school hockey team, and during hockey season, his grades were better, he was able to focus better, his behavioral issues weren't a problem, he really did well. But as soon as hockey season finished, he would go right back to kind of, missing assignments, his grades would dip, there would be some behavioral issues. And so I was at the 504 meeting. In this particular case, it was a 504 plan that the kid had. And she said, we were sitting around in the meeting, and I said, my son really does well during hockey season, and right now this hockey season's not, hockey's not in season. You give him gym 2 days a week, you think you could give him gym 4 days a week? And everybody kind of looked at each other and nodded and said, sure, let's try it. And she said it made the world of difference for her son. And the real beauty of that is that, A, she found something that didn't cost the school money. So she took away one of the bigger reasons for them to say no. The other thing is that she came up with that solution because she really knew her son. She knew what he would respond to, and she followed up on it, and it made all the difference. And that is the key to that story. And I can't encourage parents to do that enough.
I love that story.
That's a spectacular story, Rob. I mean, it really gets to the heart of all that stuff. But I want to kind of highlight some. I suspect some people out there struggle with that. Like, how do I? Sometimes those things are obvious. Sometimes they're a little bit more subtle. And just as a coach, I do a lot of just sitting there when I'm working with people and saying, okay, when was a time when they weren't struggling or things were okay? And you start to look at the environmental factors that were kind of in play and kind of what's going on. And then you kind of compare what's going on in those times when that wasn't an issue, and they are, and you look for those things that might be different or those the commonalities to give you clues as to, like, what works. And this one's an easy one to illustrate. The times that it's going really good is during hockey season, and when he's not playing hockey, it's not. It's either hockey or the exercise, and so it's easy to identify. But that fundamental look at when it's going good and bad, that can really give you the clues to kind of help you pinpoint when it's not quite as obvious. I'm interested for you guys to comment on that, but just a practical way to start to figure some of that stuff. Does that make sense to you, Kirsten?
Absolutely, it makes sense to me. I mean, even, you know, talking to kids about why they do well in one class versus another or year to year, sometimes you're looking at how a teacher is teaching or you're looking at who they're sitting next to. So asking those questions around when are they doing well is absolutely important to you know, identifying what needs to be put in place. And sometimes it is such an easy thing, like just introducing or modifying one thing in their schedule.
Right. Another thing that comes out a lot, especially from coaches, is that it's also very important to identify what I call people's prime time. There are certain times of day when people are more receptive to processing information or more energetic. And if there are classes that students are having that are more challenging classes at that more difficult time of day, parents need to kind of know that. And it may be just a matter of rearranging their schedule, as Kirsten was saying. I think that is really important. But it takes that questioning and pulling that information from the kids and looking at their schedule and really getting involved that makes the difference there.
Well point. I also like the prime time thing. That's one thing that I notice when working with my people is people have peak times, prime times, and down times. And I haven't heard anybody say that in a long time, but that's a good tidbit for our listeners out there. We only have a little bit of time left, Rob. One of the things we talked about, the space and understanding the diplomacy and the need to really understand your child and stuff. Let's say that you get a program in place and you have a 504 IEP or whatever. Once you get that from the school, let's talk about the importance and the need to continue to make sure that meetings happen and document things into the files for use in the future. And specifically, I think we're going to be doing a show about teens and the juvenile justice system with ADHD. And when they get into that, having these files and these records of these of what the schools are doing can be real important. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, I think it's important that once everything's in place on paper, it's really important for parents to monitor that, A, the services and support are being given. That's number one. And number two, that even though you asked for this, as it's being given, is it effective? And if not, you know, parents have to remember something. This is kind of a practical tip, but the schools are required by law to bring parents in once a year to evaluate the IEP or the 504 plan. And so typically at the end of April or beginning of May, they start herding these parents in like cattle, and they've got to get all of these meetings done. And so everybody gets their 10 or 15 minutes, and they're kind of bringing people through. That's a rough time to get major changes in an IEP talked about or even, you know, integrated. Parents need to know that that doesn't mean you're limited to that one meeting once a year. Ask for a meeting in November if things aren't working well. Don't wait till the spring. And if you get one of those meetings that's not at the time where they're doing their annual reviews, you'll get more time. And another thing that's really important is to communicate with teachers and with administrators and to do it in writing, even if it's something as simple as an email that you can print out or a note thanking a teacher for trying something new that works with their son or daughter. And you'd be surprised at how helpful that could be down the line. If, for instance, your son or daughter gets seated at the front of the room because they're having difficulty seeing the blackboard. If that's the case, thanking the teacher with a note that you can make a copy of saying, I really appreciate you noticing that they had difficulty seeing what was going on in class and moving it up front. Because down the line, if you're asking for services and the school says something like, well, you know, we don't have a diagnosis, so we had no indication that there was a sight impairment, you can always pull these things out and say, you know, I even thank the teacher for trying this. They tried it in fourth grade and it worked. Really be on top of documenting. If there's one thing that parents take away from this, aside from the diplomacy issue, is to really do everything that you can with the school in writing. It doesn't have to be an adversarial tone. But just thanking them even or recognizing their you know willingness to kind of work with your child really kind of locks them in place that that's a necessary and helpful thing.
Rob, in our previous show when we were talking to you just about some of your background, you're also talking about the fact that, you know, some of these students who are getting services, in my experience and maybe in yours, have a much higher risk of getting in trouble at school, either because the teachers are paying more attention to them or because their behavior draws more attention. And oftentimes they find themselves getting in trouble, you know, either at school because of their behavior or sometimes in the community. How is it going to help to have these records when it comes to those kinds of situations?
Well, when it comes to a situation where you have the real key here, is if a student gets in trouble in school, the parents are entitled to, if they get suspended past a certain amount of days, I believe it's 10 days, if they're classified for special education, they're entitled to what's known as a manifestation hearing. And there what you really, I mean, look, if a student gets caught doing something, the initial superintendent's hearing is to decide whether or not they did it. We all know they did it. That's not the issue. The question really is why and where this behavior comes from. And the manifestation hearing is really to determine whether or not the disability, or this was a manifestation of their disability, this particular behavior. And sometimes schools will fight you on that because they want to suspend these kids because somebody got hurt or there was, you know, an issue or an outcry from other parents. And it's really important that all of these behavioral issues be documented because a lot of these kids, people think of kids with ADHD as being hyperactive, and so that may be a behavioral issue in school. But I find that the bigger culprit compared to, as opposed to hyperactivity, is really impulsivity. These kids know the difference between right and wrong. They know what they're supposed to do and they're not supposed to do. The problem with the portion of the brain, and again, I'm not a doctor, but the portion of the brain that really regulates executive functioning is an inherent inability for these kids to regulate or to stop themselves from following up on an impulse that they really know is going to get them in trouble. They can't control those impulses. And that's what really leads to antisocial and potentially criminal behavior. And so having those things documented, every letter that came home, even if it says, you know, he talks out in class and doesn't wait to be called upon, that shows impulsivity. All of those things are important to document and keep. Because they will help you later on make that case. That doesn't necessarily mean you'll win, but you have a basis, and if you have to go over the school's head, you have a paper trail, and that's really important.
That really makes a lot of sense to me that you at that point in time, you have hindsight. You've got a mirror, if you will, going back so you can say, see, this has been there, as opposed to he said, she said. And it seems to me that can really, really – really save you in some situations if you've got that documentation.
Yes, I agree.
Before we close this stuff out, Kirsten, any comments or Rob, any last tips on this space?
I just think it's important for parents to document everything and to really kind of keep in mind that this is really about getting the services that your child needs. If you can't put your emotions aside, bring someone like a psychologist or an advocate into the process with you that can be objective. That's really important.
Kirsten, any last comments?
No, I think the comments that are coming to my mind are a whole other show.
Well, I can tell you, Rob and I, Kirsten, we sat down and started talking about the show a while ago, and I got a real education from Rob. And what I took from that conversation and this, for the listeners out there, is the system is supposed to work a certain way. It's supposed to go out and find your kids and provide these services, but there's not an incentive to do that. So if you think that that's going to work the way it's supposed to, it doesn't. You need to pay attention to how it really works. And that is, you need to get the education, number one. And I realize that that's kind of daunting. It's an emotional time. It's not the best time, but you got to focus on that education. You got to focus on your individual child and try to figure out what they need and remove the mystery of it as you go into it. And you got to go in with diplomacy. You got to realize this is all about this isn't cut in stone. There's a lot of subjectivity to this, and the ability to get this stuff has a lot to do with your ability to come in and be diplomatic in this process. And I really liked what Rob said is you walk in knowing that those things are there, but if you can kind of help craft simple, inexpensive ways to kind of help your child, you're setting yourself up much better for success. And all that goes back to the education of understanding this and understanding your individual child.
Yes, so, can I just say one more quick
yes.
thing? Like I said before, none of this is a guarantee that you're going to be successful in this process. However, I like to say this a lot, that it could mean the difference between navigating a minefield with a map in your hand versus being chased through one blindfolded. And parents really need to know that.
That's I got a real clear picture of that. That makes all the sense in the world. So, Rob, again, thank you for coming on the show. For those who want to, if you need have any questions, you can reach Rob at rtudisco@edgefoundation.org. You can also learn more about Rob by going to edgefoundation.org. And with that, Rob, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Kirsten, as always.
Good night, Jeff.
Everybody, join us next week for another great edition of Attention Talk Radio.